But right now, we get to sit down with the man who made a commitment to be our Friday profile right on the air. He called in. He was courageous enough to call in when we had Mango Groove. And I ambushed you. I ambushed you and said, when are you coming onto the show?
Yeah.
Jack Devnarain. Yeah. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for railroading me. I am now here.
Yes, yes, I'm glad. And a lot of people will know you from the character that you play on Isidingo, one of the longest running roles or characters on the show, Rajesh Kumar.
Yeah.
And you've done a hell of a lot. We know you for that role, but there's also comedy, there's drama. And I was surprised by the comedy side of things because I know you as this strict businessman who does his business ethically as Rajesh Kumar.
Well, that's only true until they say cut.
Yes.
And then we are like a zoo in studio.
Really?
Because we are all so close. And you can imagine all these creative people, you know, so focused on their work. We absolutely love to work with each other. And I suppose you kind of saw that as well when you had Mango Groove in studio. The way those creative energies just gel. And you'll find a similar thing with us in studio on Isidingo. As soon as they call cut, that's us.
Yes.
Then it's, you know, everybody's having a laugh at something or somebody else and is coming back at you as quickly as you're giving it.
Wow. It's great. It's great because you spend so much time on set. Shooting a soapy is one of the most demanding things because your life is the production literally owns your life. The hours, the early starts, the late finishes, how much time you spend on set.
I think that's something that people coming into the performance industry may not know.
Mm-hmm.
So please try not to scare them. It is true, though. It is absolutely that. And I can honestly say that most of the time that I spend is in preparation for what happens in studio.
Mm-hmm.
I will be sitting with scripts for hours every day, whether I'm shooting tomorrow or not. I've got scenes ahead of that I need to plan for.
Wow.
And that's just the prep. When I get into studio, then that's the time to play because suddenly the other person in the script that you were reading, now suddenly is there. That's alive.
Yes.
And that becomes the collaboration that really gets energy flowing. And that's the magic of performance, I think. And nobody really goes into that, you know, that discussion about what happens. What is your process? How do you prepare yourself? How do you learn your lines?
Yeah.
But the truth is, that's about 80% of my work.
Before you get to perform it.
Absolutely.
So the preparation ahead of time. Preparation is everything, of course. But this drama and being on television has always been a part of your life. Your mom was a drama teacher.
Yeah. In fact, my mom taught me speech and drama when I studied that as a matric subject. So,
yes.
And to go back even further, mom taught me English. She was my form teacher.
Oh my gosh. What's that like?
Being taught by your
own
parents.
It was
amazing. My mom was a very powerful formative teacher because she would give me an insight about why we need to learn.
Mm-mm.
At that time, we're talking in the early 80s going up, I matriculated in 88. And it wasn't a realistic idea to say, you know, I'm really going to be a professional actor. You could imagine it.
Yeah.
You could dream it. But it wasn't a realistic possibility.
Why was that?
We were still very divided as a society, as an industry. It didn't occur to anyone that actually, yes, maybe we should see black and Indian colored people on screen. It was kind of taken for granted that as a performer, you should be white.
Yes. To the point where the way in which you found out about the Isidingo role was through an advert.
Yeah.
In the newspaper that your mother told you about.
That's
so
right.
So instead of turning to casting agencies and so on, yes, sometimes you'll get the publication of auditions, but often the route is to just to go to casting agencies and find actors that way.
Pretty much. And I think, there were a number of factors that led to that, including the fact that, you know, if you are looking for Indian performers, and especially in those years, you are going to go to Durban. You were going to go there. That's not to say that there were no Indian performers in Johannesburg at that time.
Yeah.
But certainly, there was a lot of talent. There still is. and they were coming out of universities. They were producing their own stuff. They were touring in community shows. Mm. And that was pretty much my own background as well.
Yes, doing the theater circuit and community
You
theater.
Learn so much. Yeah. You learn so much. You know how to connect with your audience in such a fundamental way. You want to tell those stories.
Mm-hmm.
And people want to see you telling their stories.
Yes.
And that's the real heart of the connection that you find as a performer. Before it all becomes professional.
Yeah.
Here I am now as part of the industry. And yes, it did change. But part of why, you know, looking at the route I followed coming into the mainstream industry, I suppose, yeah, Endemol had to go and advertise in a newspaper because Durban doesn't really have, as much as they claim to, they don't really have all the necessary structures in place to have a viable industry.
Yes.
The elements are there.
Yeah.
But if I have to hear one more time about how Anand Singh is going to build a studio to shoot big movies in Durban, you know, when I left Durban in 2002, I heard it then.
Yes.
It is now 2017, the year of our Lord, and I'm still hearing that same story.
Wait, hold on. You left Durban in 2002.
Yeah.
But I thought you joined, you left the police service. Is that when explore professional acting?
Yeah.
In 1998?
I started in the police in 1994.
Mm-hmm.
And it went on all the way up until I left the police to become part of the Isidingo cast.
Yeah.
So there was, in fact, all my career in the police, I always made opportunities, found the time to still pursue my passion, mm-hmm. which is performance.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, there were things that came up, mostly theater. And of course, it's very easy to look at, you know, the bulk of my, the body of my work now and assume that it's mostly film and TV.
Yes.
The formative part of my career was all theater work.
Yes.
And I am so, so grateful
for that.
What
were these productions that you're doing? Because I know that many of them were comedies.
Yeah. Yeah, there were, incredible comment. I'm looking at Umar Isaac right now.
I know. CEO. He's also from Durban. He was influential in growing some of the Durban-based stations, and now he's here.
I never told you, but he was actually a student teacher who taught me drama.
Wow.
Yeah, and so he was serving under my mum, who was the teacher.
Yes.
He came in as a student teacher in order for him to finish his B.Ed. I think he was doing an education degree, and he taught me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I've had to unlearn everything that
Omar, I hope you're listening to this. So no, let's get back to the type of productions that you were doing in this theatre circuit that was largely confined to the Indian community in Durban. But you were from Tongaat, right?
That's right, yes. It was the land of sugarcane and
those rolling KZN hills.
Oh, you know it. And we were very, very close to the beach as well.
Mm-hmm.
A short walk away. And that, for me, was heaven. If you have to ask me now where I would go when things are really becoming too much,
yeah.
I would find myself in my head on that beach, not too far from home. You know, you can feel that breeze coming off the ocean and you can hear the rustle of that wind through the sugarcane leaves. I'm there.
Mm.
That's my happy place.
Peace.
Yeah, absolutely.
So was entering the police force out of need, or was there a deep-seated passion to be a part of law enforcement?
It was circumstance. A lot of it was circumstance. But truthfully, I had imagined myself as a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
I had completed my undergrad degree at the University of Natal. And here I am at 1993, and I want to enter the working world because my family needs me to start earning something.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a typical scenario for many, many students. You actually need to earn. You need to service that debt. You have walked out with a degree certificate in your hand, and you've got nothing to show for it.
Mm.
And I thought, well, where do I start? I want to do performance, but I know I can't. If I have to become, you know, an attorney, it means going through a whole other process, you know, of being an article clerk and then studying further. I don't have that money.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized, nah, I'm going to enforce the law. It was the perfect time as well. 1994 was freedom. And that meant it was an opportunity to serve. For me, that was the basis of my understanding of how law should be used in order to serve and what the police force could be. That was the transition from police force to police service. And I embraced that in many ways, in a very naive way as well, because that was a time of some very violent protests that were happening in KZN around the country. I also realized what the social pact made between the police service and the community it's meant to serve, when that is broken. When there is mistrust, then you cannot serve. It means that people would rather become victims of crime than to allow you to assist them. So it was...
Must have been incredibly frustrating.
It was hugely frustrating. And I don't think we unpack enough about the frustrations that policemen and women have even today when they are out in the field, on the beat, being forced into playing political games that they want no part of. And they just want to say, what do I do to serve?
We will get to explore some of that. We're taking your calls as well. I don't want to hog my guest and have him all to myself.
Hog away.
Myself. That's Jack Devnerain, and he's known for a number of roles. He was on City Sesla, 37 Honey Street. There was Home Affairs, Complex, as well as Snitch. And then there was 31 Million Reasons, feature film. We'll get to that. Well, you played a cop, interestingly. But let's take this call from David, who's been listening in. David from Kensington. Hi, David.
Hello. Hi, good afternoon, and good afternoon to Mr. Devnerain. My name's David Sherwood. I've been an actor for 40-something years. And I don't know what Jack's desires are, but I hope the powers that be invite him to take a permanent place on the SABC board, because I think we need an actor on that board.
Thank you. Thank you, David.
Oh, thank you for the call, David. So what did you think of the DA's nomination that you be part of this interim board? Do you play a part in the DA?
No, I don't. It was an interesting question, though. The question was, Mr. Devnerain, as chairman of the South African Guild of Actors, would you accept a nomination to be on the interim board of the SABC? And that presented a dilemma for me, because in one sense, people know Jack and they want to buy into that. On the other hand, the South African Guild of Actors it has a mandate to remain completely unbiased and not attached to any political party for whatever reason. And that's something that our entire executive committee live by. What did it mean then in order to accept that nomination? It meant that for the very first time, we were being given a platform on which to bring the actors' concerns into the agenda.
Yes.
And it was from there that we could honestly say that, okay, now our grievances are being heard because we have legitimate concerns, and we are using every avenue available to us to bring this to the attention of not just the SABC, of every broadcaster in the country. And we are deliberately marginalized because people understand that when the actors stand their ground, when they have to show solidarity in order to achieve the progress that we need to achieve, to effect reform in our industry, there will be big changes, and people are afraid of big change.
Right. So why do you think then that the standing together, because we saw the Generation 16, I remember with an Mnet production, The Wild, when Tony Khoroge stood up. Yes, it will make a couple of headlines, but we don't see fundamental change.
No, we don't.
The industry largely remains the same. The conditions, the contracts remain the same.
That is the heart of the entire controversy, because it's all to do with, do actors understand their status in law? And part of what SAGA has to do is to educate actors on how does the law perceive you? What is your place in law, in the economy, in the industry? And unfortunately, many actors, professional actors at the top of their game, recognized for their work around the world, perhaps don't even understand right now that you are an independent contractor, and that is different from being an employee. The differences are that as an independent, You are free to contract your services to whatever production is out there. As long as you're not bound by contract, go ahead.
Mm.
Work as much as you can. As much as you work, so you shall earn.
Mm.
And whatever expenses you incur in pursuit of that income, you can claim that back from SARS.
Yes, yes.
On the other hand, you have employees who are protected by labor law. They have the rights to workman's compensation and leave, sick leave, maternity benefits. They can be part of their employer's pension scheme and all these things.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the right to strike if there's a dispute. Often, unfortunately, actors make the mistake of thinking that you can claim the benefits of being an employee when the truth is the contract that you sign
yes.
is as independent contractor.
Mm.
And that's not to say that SAGA isn't lobbying so that we must gain some benefits. It's wonderful to have the freedom, but if we are not being protected by law,
mm-hmm.
then we'll lose on both sides.
Absolutely, that's the thing.
Absolutely, we can't have that. You cannot take a vulnerable entity like an independent contractor and say, well, so sorry, now you have nothing and we actually don't care.
Mm.
We have to be able to say, yes, you are independent. However, we have balanced that in terms of social justice by saying we are protecting you, we are giving you a dispute resolution mechanism.
Yes.
So that you can take a legitimate grievance and have it heard. And yes, we want to protect you because if you are injured on set today, you have workman's compensation that will work for you.
Mm-hmm.
And these things are denied us. And nobody can explain to me why.
Mm.
That is the heart of our grievance. And no, people are not listening.
Yes, I know for many years, arts and culture will get a group of people in a room. These issues get ventilated, how legislation needs to change, whether it's musicians, whether it's actors, whether it's movie producers. But I haven't seen any fundamental change, especially when it comes to laws.
Yeah.
But I want us to take a break. I see the calls. We'll be getting to them afterwards. My guest is Jack Devnarain. And yes, his smile is just as charming. His eyes are just as soulful as you see on
only
the TV
for you,
screen.
Azania.
Can't believe that we're going to be out of time in no time, in fact. Let's quickly go to Vinay calling from Greenstone. Hello, Vinay.
Hi, Azania. It's Vinay. I remember Jack as Himal, and he would remember me as Yogarani.
I also
have the good fortune of being taught by his wonderful mom.
Oh.
I wanted to say, hi, Jack, and you keep going. It's amazing that you're still flying the flag.
And it's amazing to hear you. After all these years, thank you.
Vinay, thank you
Hopefully
so much for the call.
I'll meet you again sometime soon. Take care, Jack.
Bye-bye. Oh,
thank you. That's Vinay. And then Kaya in Pretoria East. Hi, Kaya.
Hello, Azana. How are you?
I'm
and
good.
Hi, Jack.
Hello, Kaya.
I don't know if Jack will remember. I'm Kaya Buteleza. I used to work with him at the Italian Municipality. I worked in the communications department. And he was a metro cop, but we used to use him in our staff functions as MC. So we didn't have to pay for the MC because Jack was there for us.
In-house.
Yes, I remember. All I said was, please just book me on overtime, which you were very kind enough to do.
It's been quite a joy to actually watch you over the years. And
oh,
the big break you got on ECDMO, congratulations, and still keep on flying the damn flag.
Oh, for sure, my friend. Thank you so much.
Kaya,
lovely hearing from you.
Thank you for the call. Wow. There are a couple of things that I think people might not know about you. You rocked up here sporting this incredible beard, by the way. This grey, full beard, very well-trimmed, stunning. And you say it happened after you climbed Kilimanjaro.
Yeah, and then I was told that chicks dig it.
Yes, they do. Yes, we do. Wait till your wife Pam hears about this.
Yeah, so she's had to adjust to the look. But I can tell you, it was more of a change from within that led to the change on the outside.
Uh-huh.
I was a part, a very, very, very proud and passionate part of Trek for Mandela,
mm-hmm.
and it was in 2015 that I climbed and had some very close friends with me, Pat Pillay and Leanne Manis and all of us. And it was a tremendous experience, not just for the gift of the opportunity to help young women. Mm-hmm. It was to raise funds, to collect funds, to help, to donate packs of sanitary pads,
mm-hmm.
to keep young girls in school. But the just the climb on its own became a whole different thing. And I realized that whatever stuff I was carrying in my head and in my mind and in my spirit, you actually have no choice, but you leave it on the way, either on the way up or on the way down that mountain. You leave it on Killy and you come back a different person. And that was pretty much me. And the beard just somehow reflects a change from that moment on, that now I actually choose to care about important stuff. I'm here to make a difference and I'm here to make it count.
Wow. It certainly comes through. And you love bikes. Here you are with one of those biker jackets and a massive helmet.
Yes. Well, that's because I heard chicks dig it as well. I actually started riding motorbike. It was part of my duties as a policeman.
Yes.
And it was a requirement back then in 94, Kaya will remember as well, that you have to have your driver's license and you've got to have a bike license as well, because so many of our duties were done on bikes. And it just, I know it was right for me, because looking back, those things that I learned as a policeman, I just embrace them. It's absolutely a part of me now. I love riding bikes. and I even love the shooting sports as well. And that was, you know, that's what I was exposed to for the very first time, learning musketry back then. And even that, I know this. I'm going to keep doing this.
Yes.
It's always been a part of me.
Even beyond your time in the service.
I loved it.
It's been lovely to discover all of this about you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on the show, Zanya.
An incredibly humble man with a dashing smile. And as I said, there's a twinkle in those eyes. They belong on the screen. There's no doubt about that.